Hello, welcome to the Box Room. My name's Marty.
Hello, welcome to the Box Room. My name is Jen.
Why are we here, Jen?
Why?
Why?
It's a very deep question for a podcast that's only half an hour long. This is the Box Room podcast, and this is our new series that we've decided randomly to do in lockdown because it gives us something to do.
We miss going to the pub and talking about things that we've been watching, I think.
Yeah, that's probably what it is. So what we've been doing is taking turns each episode to pick a film or a TV program or whatever we want to have a chat about, but on a theme that we have both chosen. So Marty chose time travel, and we did the Philadelphia Experiment last episode.
80s, greatness.
It was extremely 80s. And my choice was folk horror, and we did The Wicker Man for the first episode. And this episode is my choice, so we are doing Dog Soldiers this episode, which I've decided fits under the banner of folk horror, although I suspect that's extremely tenuous.
It's a bit of a shoehorn situation.
It's a little bit, yeah.
And it's a film we know we both enjoyed in the past, so we thought, why the hell not? And it really does tie into your, there's something weird happening in the woods.
Yes, that is essentially what, for me, a lot of folk horror boils down to, is the idea that the countryside is scary and terrible things are happening out there. And that's definitely fits with Dog Soldiers, and it fits with The Wicker Man. So I'm just going to say that that's fine.
I'm going to find some really tenuous time travel film to watch that's got basically nothing to do with time travel, but I can still class it as, just to get one over.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Just find the most tenuous link for a film, yeah. And then you get a packet of what's it. So, Dog Soldiers, which is what we're going to talk about today.
Let's do this.
Is a film that came out in 2002, directed by Neil Marshall, which was his debut film.
Oh, okay.
By the way. And it is essentially about some soldiers who are on a kind of training exercise in the middle of Scotland somewhere very remote and scary. And while in the middle of these manoeuvres, they come across a special forces group who have been killed, basically, apart from one bloke. And it turns out that there are werewolves in the forest, and they take shelter at a house and then have to keep the werewolves from eating them. So that's basically the synopsis, isn't it?
That's a good, rough summary. Yeah, that sums it up.
So we've both seen this before, haven't we, I believe?
Yeah, I can't remember when I saw it. I don't think I saw it at the cinema. Did it have a cinema release?
I imagine so. I don't know. I don't think I saw it at the cinema either. I also can't remember if we saw it together or not. So
it was before our time.
Before
when it was
our
released.
Time.
Yeah.
Before Senity, so like BS, they would call it, before Senity.
Bullshit.
But, yeah, that as well, funnily enough.
Bullshit years.
Yes. That works better than I thought it would.
That scans.
Yeah. Well, basically, we don't remember where or when we saw it.
But we did.
But we did see it. It wasn't completely unfamiliar to us. So we watched it again the other day. And what did you think?
It stands up as a cracking film. There's some issues with it that I have, but that's just visual.
Yeah.
I think the actual design of the werewolves and the way it moved was, I don't know whether that was like intentionally bad. So it's like, you know, to play with a sort of like there was a bit of a comedy element to it, you know, a bit of tongue in cheek about werewolves, or whether they just were really shit at like werewolf design.
It's harsh. I think I was thinking about this in like comparison to other werewolf movies, and I think it's quite hard to pull off a werewolf. Sorry. It's quite hard to get werewolf effects that look convincing, you know. It's quite tricky. Yeah. There's something inherently a bit funny about it. But, for example, we were talking about An American Werewolf in London, which is obviously really groundbreaking in terms of its special effects. And I think there's a sense of real physical horror in the transformation sequence. Whereas in Dog Soldiers, you don't really get a transformation sequence as such, do you? I think.
No, you get to see Pertwee on the turn.
Yeah.
But you don't see him transform.
And we should talk about who's in the film, actually, because that's
okay.
A big part
Let's
of it,
do,
isn't it?
Do that, we'll yeah. Talk about I think that. There's someone called Pertwee in it.
Sean Pertwee is in it. And Sean Pertwee is pretty much the only thing that I really remembered from the original viewing, with him just being a complete scene stealer in it all the way through, and all the swearing that goes on is great when delivered by Sean.
Focus, isn't he?
Yeah. And it's also got Liam Cunningham in it.
Oh, yeah.
He's the evil special forces dickhead. Who I was really confused. It was one of those things where I recognised him but couldn't figure out why until you told me.
Yeah, I was going to shout, oh, there's Liam. I forgot.
I think it's because he didn't have a beard in this and it completely threw me off because he has a beard in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, he sort of looks like a bit younger as well, a bit less weathered.
Yeah. And he's also, Davos Seaworth. Is actually a really nice character who you like, and he played a complete dickhead in Dog Soldiers. So,
truth fact.
The other person that was in it was Kevin McKidd, who I also recognised.
Was that the Father Ted Vicar who was also in Trainspotting?
Yes.
The big blonde guy.
The guy who died in Trainspotting was how I described it the other day. Yeah, so Sean Pertwee, always great value.
Oh, God, yeah.
We love him. Not just when he's doing, was it the MasterChef he used to do the voiceover for? Do you remember?
Less swearing.
Yeah, a lot less sweary, to be fair.
Yeah, so, you know, I wasn't keen.
And, of course, he plays Alfred in Gotham, which was another TV series that we really loved. The best Alfred.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Really works. You could tell like he had a services history.
Yeah.
And that is, well, they made a big thing out of it.
They did, yeah. They do. But, I mean, you can fully believe that he did used to pull people's arms off and beat them to death with them, because he has like a certain sort of menacing likableness about him. And I just loved that in Gotham they really ran with his accent and had him saying things like silly sausage or or just saying oi a lot, which I really enjoy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Sean Pertwee, amazing. Liam Cunningham was great in it.
Also always good value.
Yeah, and he did have a bit of a werewolf transformation sequence, didn't he? Because he was bitten quite early on.
Right.
And then they do quite a clever thing where he starts to transform and then falls behind the table a bit and comes back up.
Yeah, he's putting on the wolf gloves.
Yeah.
And the beard.
Contact lenses in.
Within a second.
Which I quite, you know, I like all of that stuff. And talking about the wolf makeup, I actually quite liked it because it was a little bit unsettling, I think, the fact that they were tall and skinny.
I liken it a bit to, it's a cross between American Werewolf in London and Teen Wolf.
In terms of the special effects, you're around about the level of Teen Wolf.
Special effects and sort of physicality, because they were wolves that walked on two legs.
Yes.
They looked more wolfish than Teen Wolf did.
Yeah, Teen Wolf was more of a kind of...
A hair situation going
just
on.
Just a hairy, like a very hairy man, or like a kind of fursuit thing going on a little bit. Especially the dad. I always remember the dad particularly did not look like a wolf.
No.
In Teen Wolf.
It looked like an old guy with a beard.
Or like a really hairy leprechaun or something. Whereas in American Werewolf in London, the wolf transformation is into a full wolf, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I saw a picture the other day of the actual werewolf.
Mm.
And it's fucking terrifying.
It's still like scary. Yeah, it's still... There's something about that film. Although it is also like Dog Soldiers comedy horror. It's still pretty scary.
Mm.
You know, is it the Tottenham Court Road tube station?
I think so, yeah.
Scene, yeah. That's really scary.
Mm.
Yes, great film. Yeah, so it's kind of it's a comedy film and a horror film, which is a kind of classic combination, isn't it? There's a lot of really great comedy horror films like The Evil Dead 2 and others.
Three.
Yeah. And it still has some quite scary bits in it. I thought the very opening scene was effectively quite scary, you know, where it's a couple camping in the woods and something opens their tent. And it's kind of cheesy, but also the fact that there's no screaming in it. They're both really quiet, you know, while the woman's getting dragged out of the tent. They're both too frightened to actually make any noise. And I thought that was actually quite a good decision because it does make it scarier.
Yeah, so it's kind of proper fear as well when you freeze. You haven't got the energy to sort of like scream.
Yeah, and it also has a lot of really good dialogue, obviously, which was the other thing that I mainly remembered about Dog Soldiers, was all of the swearing. And also, like, just the way that they speak felt quite natural, which I'm a big fan of, particularly in horror films. So when there's a part where there's, you know, the wolf is attacking them and he's trying to punch him out of a window and he just goes, oh, just fuck off and die, or something like that. And you see, that is how you would, you know, that is sort of how you would be reacting. You would be swearing at it and telling it to fuck off, you know, and I don't think you see enough of that in horror films.
Too much edited dialogue. It can't sound natural when you speak it. A bit of a bugbear. I love the realism too. But it's like Star Wars as well. The dialogue for Star Wars was shit. But the actors managed to pull it off because, like, probably ad-libbed a lot of it.
Well, Harrison Ford supposedly did, didn't he? But and Carrie Fisher supposedly helped with the script, I imagine. But I think in Star Wars, it's a case of the actors having enough charisma to get away with it.
It's a spectacle, but
one of the reasons that the prequels. Anyway, we're not going to get into the prequels conversation.
We could do a special on Star Wars,
couldn't we? Talk about that for fucking years.
Yeah.
It's also quite a geeky horror film as well, because there was a number of references to things, wasn't there? So one of the characters was called Bruce Campbell, for example.
Yeah.
Corporal Bruce Campbell.
He bought the farm.
Yeah, he died. But obviously that's a reference to The Evil Dead. There's a Star Trek reference as well as a reference to The Matrix. Someone says there is no spoon because a guy called Spoon cops it. Also quite a bit of good kind of body horror stuff going on, because, and this is something that I'd forgotten, but Sean Pertwee gets his guts ripped out quite early on in the film.
I remember that very clearly, but I was like, yeah, I couldn't remember it being that soon in the film that happened.
Yeah, so he kind of spends all of the film with his guts in an uncomfortable position.
Yeah.
So they basically tape him up, I think, and then take him back to the house and
try and glue it.
Glue it back in. But yeah, there was that was a great line when he gets his, you know, he gets disemboweled basically and they're trying to shove his guts back in and he's shouting, they won't fucking fit. And then eventually I think they super glue him back together, don't they?
Yeah. But then he miraculously heals.
Yes, because obviously he's on the turn by that point.
Totally Wolverined.
Yes. Yeah, so in terms of physical effects, there's a lot of gore and a lot of intestines everywhere. And as you were saying, the werewolf effect, I suppose, I think it almost, it's like all horror films really, it often works better when you don't see the monster very much.
Mm.
And then when you do see the monster, it's often a little bit like, oh, okay.
Yeah, which always kind of took me out of this film a little bit. It's like, you know, like I said, I thought the design was a bit off.
So it's like when you, in the first Alien film, when you see the xenomorph only in like little snatches and brief glimpses. And then, so like towards the end, it is Alien I'm thinking of and not Aliens, isn't it? Because I do get them mixed up. But towards the end, she manages to sort of blast the alien off into space. And you get like a quite a good clear shot of it sort of twirling off into space with his long legs sort of sticking out. And it's like, it's the only time it looks really silly.
Yeah, it's a man in a suit.
It turns out it's a really tall, skinny man. Or, of course, the really classic example of that is Jaws, where you don't see the shark all that much throughout the whole film, and it's terrifying. And then you sort of do see it at the end, and it kind of comes out onto the boat, and it's nom
nom nom nom.
Although I, to be honest,
I can eat semen all day.
I have to admit, I still think that that bit is scary. You know, it scared me when I was a kid, and I still think it's quite brutal, where the old sea dog kind of slides his way down the deck of the ship into the jaws of Jaws and gets kind of mangled up. And I said, that's still pretty, you know, still pretty scary and, you know, alarming. So that's my defence of Bruce the Shark.
That's a good defence.
Because famously, you only don't see the shark in Jaws that much because the thing kept breaking down.
Yeah.
So, you know, it could have been a very different story, I suppose. Yeah, so getting back to...
Happy accident.
Yeah. Getting back to the werewolves, the only thing that I found a bit off with it was some of the lines that the female character had towards the end of the film. Which, you know, it was fine. And I suppose she has a fairly pivotal role in it. But she had a couple of, like... awkward bits where she, I think she said something like, it's that time of the month and, you know, you won't get anything from being nice to women or something. And it's all a little bit, oh God, you know, here comes the, you know, the female character has things to say now and it will be about periods.
Is it a male writer?
Yeah. Yeah, I think Neil Marshall wrote, edited and directed it.
Oh, Neil.
Yeah, I don't know. It just... I guess it feels a little bit dated now. Apparently, there was a sequel that was being mooted for quite a while, actually, called Fresh Meat. Dog Soldiers Fresh Meat. I think they got fairly far with it, and then it just kind of disappeared.
Oh,
and
no.
Just sort of didn't happen. And then there was a lot of talk about a web series as well called Dog Soldiers Legacy.
Okay.
Back when people were suddenly doing lots of web series, I suppose.
Yeah. And that was a thing.
That was a thing for a while, wasn't it, I suppose? And then Netflix kind of came along and destroyed everything. They both kind of went the way of so many projects in Hollywood that don't actually happen. But Neil Marshall did go on to do lots of other things, including The Descent, which was a horror film from 2005. Do you remember that?
That's very well received, yeah.
Yeah, that was a great film, yeah. And kind of... Was it like an entirely female cast in The Descent, or am I misremembering that?
I believe so.
Yeah, and that was really good. I'd quite like to watch it again, because I imagine it's probably been about as long since I've seen that. Then he made a film called, in 2010, he made Centurion. Do you remember that?
No.
Oh, I should have looked it up, really, but I feel like we have seen it, and it's got something to do with the Romans. And I feel like we've probably actually seen it more than once. I don't know why I think that.
It's a very memorable film.
Yeah, and he also was responsible for the 2019 version of Hellboy, I suppose.
Oh, no! Oh, get out the window.
Reboot, was it? Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know, that's a bit... I don't think we even watched all of it, did we? I think we watched half an hour.
That long? God.
I feel bad about that. Because, you know, I'm all for more Hellboy films, but it did not work for us, I think is the polite way of putting it.
No, but thanks for trying.
Then he was also involved with Game of Thrones. He did two episodes of Game of Thrones, which were both corkers.
Writing or directing?
Directing, I think. Oh, do you know that? I haven't actually written that down. I assumed directing. But, he did Blackwater, which was the episode where everything blows up.
Wow, that's immense.
Yeah, it's a great, great episode. And he also did The Watcher on the Wall, which is a later episode, I think, from maybe series 4, where there's a big battle around the wall.
Okay, yeah.
Was it Castle Black? God, all of my Game of Thrones knowledge is slowly leaking away now.
Yeah, now the show's over, we don't have to think about it anymore.
No. But yeah, both great action-packed episodes, so yeah, they were really good.
Well, that's fair play.
He's also done episodes of Westworld, Hannibal, which is...
Yeah, it's one of your faves.
Which is interesting because every episode of Hannibal is completely batshit. So that must have been an interesting project to work on. And he also did Lost in Space, which...
No way.
Yeah.
The
the new one.
When are we going to get a new series of that? I know. Because I really enjoyed it.
We really loved it. There's been two series, hasn't there? And we liked both of them. So yeah, he's done a range of things that we have liked. And Hellboy.
So overall, if there was a score you could give Dog Soldiers out of 10... No, 11.
11?
Yeah. Oh, out of 11, what?
Awkward.
How many woofs would you give it?
How many woofs? Would be... I would probably give it 7 dog biscuits out of 11. I reckon.
Seven dog biscuits out of 11.
Yeah. With maybe like an extra woof on top just for Sean Pertwee shouting and swearing a lot.
I'd give it 6 dogs bollocks, kind of overall, but I think an extra one for the Pertwee influence too. That's a very good extra bonus point, and I'm stealing it.
Fair enough. Yeah, I enjoyed it, and it was fun to watch it again, and how much I'd completely forgotten as well, because I think I remembered it mainly taking place in the house and didn't remember any of the sort of outside bits. And I'd forgotten about the dog. There's a dog called Sam in it who tries to eat Sean Pertwee's guts point. Yeah. That was great. Also, the word twat is used repeatedly, which I always enjoy as well, because it's so rare to hear twat on anything. And when you do hear it, it's being mispronounced by Americans. And then it's very upsetting because they say, like, oh, you twat. And it's like, that's
what,
not...
That doesn't exist.
Twat and twat, completely different, levels of insult, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Twat, twat, twat.
Yeah, twat sounds a lot like twit, doesn't it? And that's sort of no.
That's basic. Twit means, oh, you silly sausage.
Yes, you nincompoop.
Oh, you deep blundering buffoon.
Yeah. Whereas twat is a lot more satisfying.
Yeah.
And aggressive.
Twat's a slap. Twits are ruffling your hair. It's, oh, off you go, you scamp.
Yeah, you scallywag.
I'm glad we cleared that up.
So, the next episode is going to be your choice, isn't it?
Yes, whoop, whoop.
Whoop. So do you have anything in mind yet for the next one?
I'm going to do History of Time Travel as...
Oh, yeah.
As I kind of, like, mooted before. I think it's a great one. It's, I think, like I said before, it's one you have to watch to get the benefit from. But, you don't actually have to pay... kind of attention to the story that much. You can just like appreciate it, but you just need to watch it. You just need to see what's happening in front of your eyes. And it's an amazing, it's like, this is time travel story done fantastically, but on such a low budget. And you don't notice that, it didn't need a big budget. There's no flashy effects or anything. It's pure documentary with some, some footage in there. And stuff that's done really well. It just works so brilliantly. It's like the more I think about it, the more I can't wait to watch it again.
Well, that's good. So that'll be our next one.
Absolutely. Because I think that thing is, it's like a rewatch as well. There's always something new that you're going to see in that you missed the first time around. So great stuff. Yeah, we're going to do that.
Cool. And then we were talking about potentially throwing it open to suggestions, weren't we?
Yeah, so get those caps of thinking out
all,
of
kind all
of
two your, people that are listening
storage boxes. Get them on your head and think about what either time travel or
folk horror.
Because we're going to do one of each from your suggestions, hopefully.
Yes, depending on if they're rubbish or not. Sorry. Yeah, so I'm open to most horror suggestions, basically, but if it can be involving the countryside. Or wolves, maybe, then that would be great.
And so, maybe with time travel, just like lesser known ones, still great. It still has a meaning that you love it, but it's not like a mainstream. Not Time Cop, it's not Back to the Future.
Oh, we're not going to do Time Cop?
No.
Fucking hell.
F that. Well, we could do Time Cop if there's enough.
I've not seen it, actually.
No.
Is that Jean-Claude Van Damme, isn't it?
We could do it for lols.
Yeah. I once owned a Time Cop comic.
Was that in the bullshit years?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. when did Time Cop come out? That must have been in the 90s.
I haven't got a Google appliance handy.
Could ask.
Yeah. Hey Google, what year was Time Cop released?
In the United Kingdom, Time Cop came out on the 6th
1995.
There
thanks,
you go.
Google.
So, yeah, I was 14. No, we're not talking to you now, bitch.
Handbag.
Handbags. Yeah, so I was 14, and for some reason I ended up with a Time Cop comic. I don't even know where that came from. I had a lot of weird comics then. So that's what's going to happen. Not Time Cop, but History of Time Travel will probably be our next episode. And if you have any suggestions of other things that you think we should watch,
give us a shout.
Then tell us.
We're on Twitter. Yes. I'm Doug Strider on Twitter.
Yes, and I am at Senny Dreadful on Twitter. So, yeah, you can reach either of us on there and tell us what you think we should watch. So, is there anything that you've watched lately that you've enjoyed or anything you're looking forward to?
I'm still working my way through those fucking Auntie Donna podcasts. And I finished now watching, they did a DVD-style commentary for their episodes on Netflix.
Yeah,
that was... It was great in a way, but it's not very informative because they're just like doing their podcasts and like remembering. So, oh yeah, we're supposed to be talking about the show. So, but it's still a worthy stuff. So yeah, anyway, I'm still saluting the flagpole of Auntie Donna.
Classic. I don't know why I asked this question because I don't have anything written down for it. So I don't know. I just read Sharpe's Triumph by Bernard Cornwell, which was great. A classic, yes. Only 30 more Sharpe books to go, I think. It's great because he's such a brilliant character and I love it. I've just got Animal Crossing, which I wanted to say Aminal Crossing then. Aminal.
You can say Aminal.
Can I? Aminal Crossing. Which I'm just getting my head around. It's very cute. And I just got stung by a load of wasps. So that's that's great.
I think the other thing at the moment, Disney Plus, they've just added Star to their lineup. Which is when they bought out Fox, I think.
That would make sense.
Achieve a lot of content. So basically, now they've got parental settings that you can use it now, because like there's a lot more adults. So
adult stuff. Content. Oh, yes, that's right.
We're not talking porn, you dirty.
It's not Channel 4.
It's not Channel 4, it's not Red Triangle.
Late night on a Friday. No, that's a good point. Yes, there's a whole load of new stuff on. Well, I say new, obviously not. New, but there's a whole load of stuff on Disney Plus now. And we watched Kung Pao earlier, didn't we? Which is one of our favourite films.
I was going to take out the DVD of that today, but I found out that it was actually on Star on Disney Plus. So we watched that today, which if you haven't watched it, please watch it, because like, you'll be quoting it for weeks.
Fucking ridiculous.
It's amazingly silly.
And we also watched a new cartoon.
Solar Opposites.
Yes, Solar Opposites, which appears to be by the same people who did Rick and Morty.
Which is great. Surprisingly great.
Yeah, I loved it. It was
when you're not sure because you haven't heard anything about it at all and you put it on, it's like, I don't know what this is because I had literally heard nothing about it. Didn't know it existed. There's like, at the time of recording now, there's only 2 episodes on there. So we watched those and they were brilliant. So I'm looking forward to seeing more of that.
Yeah, it's basically about aliens who have landed on Earth and have like a mission to, you know, wipe out humanity and take over. But it's a bit like Invader Zim in that they're not necessarily very good at it, I think.
Yeah, I got kind of a Zim reference to that as well. Yeah.
Yeah, but if you liked Rick and Morty, then you'll also like Solar Opposites because it's
absolutely
essentially exactly the same humour,
the same animation,
same voice. It's very good. Highly recommended.
Great stuff. So, get on it or don't. It's up to you, really.
So, yeah, we don't care.
Yeah.
So that's it.
Let's move on. Let you enjoy the rest of your morning, afternoon, evening.
Yep, we're going to go and possibly eat a pizza, but we're still quite full up from lunch. So just to keep you informed.
Hey, so thanks for listening. If you did, if you didn't, you won't be able to hear this.
Thank you and good night.
We're gonna change the world, you'll be amazed, so full of praise. When we rearrange the world, we're gonna change. Go with us, run with us. We're gonna change the world, you'll be amazed, so full of praise. When we rearrange the world, we're gonna change. So come with us, run with us. We're gonna change the world. Oh,
Grr, arg,
motherfucker!
Sit, Ubu, sit. Good dog.